Hello everyone and welcome to this penultimate episode of Series 3 of The Stagey Place with me, Elliot Shepherd, where today I will be chatting with Jake Wabey, who is an absolutely brilliantly kind and talented video producer who has worked with some of your favourites from the West End stages. And we're going to kick it off by just heading straight into this episode today, so please sit back, relax and get ready to listen to my interview with Jake Wabey, the video producer. Hello, Jake. Welcome to the Stagey Place.
Hello. It's nice to see you. Nice to meet you. I mean, crazy Corona time meeting over Zoom, but I'm thrilled.
Absolutely. We were saying, weren't we, that over the course of the lockdown, we've been able to talk to new people in the industry because beforehand, everybody would have been so busy that nobody would have been available to do a podcast. But now everyone's indoors. So we tried to grab our chance to chat to people. And we'll chat to you today, Jake, about your career. But yeah, it's really nice to just talk to new people that I've never met before.
Absolutely. And everyone's a Zoom expert now, apart from me, obviously. Our little stumble as we went into this. Because I'm obviously a video producer, I can't believe I'm so bad at this.
Yeah.
Heck, it's awful. I'm just awful. I'm just so bad. Honestly, I can't feel.
So I had a Zoom meeting the other day with my grandparents and they didn't even have Zoom installed. And
yeah. Great. Wonderful.
And this is like 8 months into the pandemic. Yeah. So it was crazy. Yeah. Absolutely crazy. So Jake, today, thank you so much for coming on to the Stagey Place. We're going to be chatting about your incredible career as a video producer later on.
Well, thank you.
Well, I do like to praise my guests.
There you go.
But first of all, what I really want to do is take a step back and find out what a younger Jake was like and how you first got into theatre.
Well, I don't know if this is going to be surprising because obviously we don't know each other at all.
No,
but I actually started as a performer. I grew up in the south of Spain and I was a singer essentially. So I would go around bars, clubs, theatres, restaurants, stage, all of those things. And I would be singing pop music. And I kind of found musical theatre at age 14 or 15 and just loved it. I just fell in love with the storytelling aspect of it. Just everything about it I loved. And yeah, so I kind of moved to London with the idea of becoming an actor and training. And yeah, and that's kind of how I got into musical theatre as such. But then I finished my training. I went to the American Musical Theatre Academy here in London. And then I went to New York for a little bit to train as an actor. But as I came back from New York, I realized that I didn't want to do that. And yeah, and I just kind of fell out of love with it. I kind of went, what can I do that I'll love and that I can still be creative in and still kind of put my stamp on? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And when you were in Spain, were you singing, you know, your generic, you know, pop songs or was it musicals? Like, what were you doing at the time?
It was very much pop songs. I used to really want to be Robbie Williams when I was 8.
Amazing.
Like, really obsessed with Robbie Williams. I just couldn't think of anything better than to be him. And yeah, I used to write my own music and everything. And then it just fell out of my life. And it's kind of sad. And I think it might come around one day. But I think also, like, I love what I do. And I love the opportunities that I get and the people I get to meet and the creative things that I get to do. Sometimes I'm like, I can't believe this is actually my job. That I get to go around and film people singing and, you know, when people are just stuck in an office on a phone, you know. That's a bad thing, but I just would hate it.
And so what moment then did you first find out about, you know, technical abilities within theatre and, you know, kind of pursuing it maybe as a career?
I always, always loved video editing and filming stuff when I was younger. It's a very strange place, the south of Spain, and I say that because it's all like a little English community, really weirdly. And I went to international school and I did everything in my school. So I designed the website, I did all the lighting and sound for all the school shows, I filmed all the school shows, I filmed all the school videos. And I think when I went into performing full time, I was like, I used to do so many random things.
Yeah.
And I'm missing all of the things, like the lighting, the sound, the video, all of those things that I used to do. I missed so much and never didn't have it. It was always a part of me. You know, I remember going on a family holiday to Germany and I was just there with a camera the whole time, filming the whole experience.
Yes.
And that was just me. And I didn't really think of it much as a career until I was looking for a kind of a side earner as an actor, going, what can I do that will allow me to go on auditions and stuff? I hate auditions, you know. What will allow me to do that and act at the same time. And I came up with some of these video things. And I then fell out of love with acting and then decided to kind of pursue it full time and realized how much it was a part of me and is a part of me. Because as a video producer, you are really kind of doing a lot of jobs, especially if you're not on like a super high budget shoot. You're the sound man, you're the lighting man, you're kind of, I guess, jack of all trades.
Yeah.
Master of everything.
Take it, own it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Jack of all trades. I think that's why I love it so much, is because it kind of reminds me of young me kind of running around doing absolutely everything because I was the only person who knew how.
Yeah, and I think you made some really good points there, but especially like, you know, taking the camera on holiday. I used to do it all the time, especially in university. We went to Finland and I was not going over there to do a video at all. We went over to perform King Lear with their University of Tampere. And I just took loads of videos, and the university didn't know that I was doing this, but I came back and I made a montage, and the video did quite well, and I think it's still on Vimeo around if you find it somewhere. But yeah, that was just an incredible time, just to keep those memories of being on holiday. And then another time, I went to Barcelona. This wasn't a theatre trip, and I did another video with loads of montages, but it wasn't a theatre trip, and it was just all media people, and I was alone in the university house, and I was like, right, I'm going to go as this spare theatre person. And
wow, a spare theatre person, yeah. I love that, that's spare the name of your book, person. I feel, spare theatre person.
But I went over, like I say, this wasn't a theatre trip, but I just took my camera again, and I made loads of videos and montages, and it's like what you were saying about being a video producer is also not just about the video, it's the lighting, and it's the sound, and making sure that everything's okay in the room. And it's like what we were saying about a jack of all trades. It allows you to be able to have all these skills that you could jump from being a video producer on one project to being, you know, your audio producer, to then combining the two maybe on another project. And also you could be doing this whilst being a performer again in a couple of years time, like you spoke about recently in this episode. It doesn't stop you from doing other things, whereas if you're a performer, you may just be, you know, learning to be a performer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And whereas we as theatre makers are jack of all trades.
Of course, absolutely. And I think there's a lot to be said for also kind of navigating today's world in the sense of having your own business and being able to communicate with people and being able to turn up to a shoot, and even though there's 6 million things to set up, it be present and pleasant and happy and kind of the person that you want to portray to the world. Because I think it's very easy to lose that when you're in the stress of production and you've got time limits and budgets and all of those things. And equally, when you're trying to make a living, it's very difficult sometimes to go, actually, these people are humans too, and we're all just trying to create something great. So let's try our best to kind of make that possible.
I'm just going to jump in here. Hi everyone, I'm Robin from High Top Design, and you're probably wondering who I am. Well, I'm a graphic designer with over 10 years experience in corporate communications. I've recently been working with Elliot on the new logo for the Stager Place, and I'm the one responsible for the cartoon versions of his guests. But why am I interrupting the interview? I just wanted to let you guys know that as well as podcast artwork, I can help with lots of other things. Design projects, CVs, photo restorations, websites, magazines, posters, programs, anything like that, just give me a shout. Honestly, no job is too big or too small, and I will work with you to make sure the end result looks awesome. Don't need anything designed? No worries at all. I know you love theatre as you're listening to this podcast, so you will probably like my range of musical theatre prints and badges. I also have a cute range of mushroom pride pins, or I can make you and your family and friends into cartoon versions like the guests of this show. You can find all this and much more on my website, hightop.design, or give me a like and a follow on Instagram and Facebook. I'm hightopdesign on those as well. Anyway, thanks guys. I will now let you get back to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And you were just talking about your company there. So you set up Jake Wabey Productions, which you own and have produced work for Everybody's Talking About Jamie, Intermissions, The Pirate Queen, and WestEnders, amongst many, many more. And what were those first initial steps, like actually breaking out as a freelancer and offering your services? Because I guess now, especially coming out of the pandemic, we're probably getting loads of companies now coming together. Like, how do you find your first stepping into the industry as a company?
I think year on year, it's actually getting harder for new people, only because everyone's now getting the idea that they can actually do anything and they can start these production companies by themselves. So what I did, I kind of used my drama school contact to do a load of work for free. That's kind of how I started. And I just, because I knew Alice Fern very well, I knew a couple of other people who, with big names. I think one of my first jobs was filming Broadway MT composer Drew Gasparini, and like I fell into that. I did it for like next to nothing, just because I wanted the experience and I wanted to say, oh, I filmed for this person. I wanted to have the footage and be like, this is my work and this is what I'm passionate about. I say that to a lot of people now, because I don't think people are as willing to do things for free because they see people earning money. But what they didn't realize is I actually worked in technical theater for 3 years while doing video production to pay the bills and do these random free jobs. So yes, that's kind of how I took my first step. But obviously there's been many steps since then, and I'm still stepping in a sense. I'm still going, okay, where am I going and what's the next level and where do I need to get to and blah, blah, blah. But I think every step you take, you kind of learn something and you make a friend and you make a contact, and that's kind of how you go. And again, I'm just a big advocate for being a good person.
Yes, absolutely.
There's a lot of people, especially in production, that are just like, oh, well, why wouldn't you charge more for that? And I'm like, well, that's not really the point of the project.
Yeah, and you know, you just spoke there about, you know, working for three. I do feel like at the start of your career, it can be really a positive experience. I know people don't really like to, but when you're talking about, you know, networking with brand new creatives, like, it really helps you get a stepping stone in crafting your area of expertise, and it allows you then to express and move on with those skills to then work with more established productions in the future. Like, it's always best to make your mistakes early on in your career, and we'll always make mistakes, but it's good to build on them early and work for those free experiences to then work in the future with more associated companies.
Absolutely. And a good point you made there is that learning, I'm still learning. Everything that I do, every project that I do, every shoot that I go on, I learn something new and or refine a certain skill. And if I'm honest with you, I still do a little bit of work for free here and there if I think it's a worthwhile project, or I think, or I want to be involved, or I believe in the person, or I just want, especially in Corona, I want a day where I don't have to think about this crazy world, you know?
If you could just get out of your house for a day and just work on a project.
And just have a good time and filming something.
Yeah, I'm like, absolutely.
Yeah, I'll do that. I mean, obviously, I don't want to take work for free, and I don't very often, but it's just something that I always think people should keep their minds open to, because it should be about the creating and the passion for it and not necessarily about the paycheck. I understand that everyone has to pay rent and everyone has to pay bills, but that's not what it was about for me, and it's still not what it's about. Like we said, we all have lifestyles and bills and things that we want to do, but I just love what I do and I want to make it the best, even if I have to spend double the amount of time that I'm invoicing for.
No, you know? Yeah, and you know, being early career, like, you know, when I was making my first kind of moves, I was looking at those low budget shows and, you know, the experiences, and more going into them just to be a nice person and to be connectable and be able to network with people. Like, I really did not mind about the money situation because I was doing what I loved, networking with people and actually just having a good time. And like you say, being a good person is number one thing that we should be, not just in our industry but in our whole society. And right. You know, I do not see why people should be, you know, so against working for free early in our careers if we can build up on our skills.
And again, I hate to harp on about this, but I would always rather someone come away from meeting me and going, you know what, he was a really good, nice person, you
absolutely.
Know, rather than going, you know, he worked for cheap, or, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. he was too expensive, or, you know, all of those things. I'd rather my legacy be, he was really lovely to work with,
yes.
and a nice person. And I think that just has to be at the forefront, especially if you're looking to get into video production or anything, really. I mean, stage managing, lighting, you know, I briefly there, I did 3 or 4 years teching in London. session on like lighting boards and soundboards and things like that. And I made a bunch of contacts just because I was allowed.
You got involved.
I tried to just be the best.
And it's about humor, the humor
kind of thing.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly. And, you know, being involved with those companies and being able to actually be there, you know, at the start of their call, even if it's not the start of your call, and actually get involved with those, you know, those warm-ups and actually being able to be in the space with the whole company.
Mate, free gym.
Yes.
Free gym. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. You know, you're playing Zips Out of Boring, or you're playing Ninjas, and it's
free,
you know,
training.
Yes, yes, exactly. As technicians, we can always just be good people and be company members, even if we don't know them that well. And so, you know, it really is most important to be a part of it.
I think for me, my biggest moments were moments that I got to work with people that I dreamed working with, and I'm now kind of consistently doing that, and it still kind of shocks me to this moment of going, oh, I actually work with all these people, like, crazy. A particular moment, I guess, in December, I obviously filmed with Jamie, which was amazing. I've always wanted to kind of directly film with a West End show. But just before that, with Hebert, we did Out of Darkness into Spotlight. It was an online concert, and I filmed that on the Apollo stage. And I was just like, this is the best day. I was talking into the sparkly microphone, you know, that Jamie uses. I was just filming and doing what I loved with all these great people.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know, it doesn't get better than this.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you look at your CV and you've worked for Jamie, for example, and you probably look at that show and you probably think, I've chosen the right path for me as a video producer. And like we say, you know, you can always go back, you can always train and, you know, become one of these people who become an actor later in their careers. And
it's really, really ancient where you go, oh my God, they're going to die on
yeah,
stage.
Be like,
that's going to be me, I feel.
like the Morgan Freeman of like the theatre world.
But JK
like,
Rowling.
It's just, yes. Oh God, yeah. Yeah, you're just a national treasure.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
No, I mean, to be honest, I have lost a lot of passion for performing, but just having, I think my biggest passion is storytelling and being able to tell whatever story I'm trying to tell in this video with the people that I'm doing it with. I think that's my biggest passion. And again, I'm a big goal person, so I always write down the things that I want to do and things that I want to be and you know, all of those things, and just seem to happen because I just love that. It's just writing down the things that I want and then working towards them and trying to make them happen. And it's been quite a good ride so far, I'm not gonna lie.
So let's jump into storytelling there. And let me ask you, does it change from day-to-day basis or project to project how you go about, you know, actually doing your video producing? Because do you ever have those conversations before the actual event with the producer to say, oh, these are my thoughts, or do you get their thoughts? You know, do you control the day over what you want to do or what the producer wants to do? How does it work? Or is it mainly just changing between event by event?
It's kind of different on a case-by-case basis. So Jamie, the video was actually Heber's idea, and she was amazing. She kind of directed it with me. But I think the story really came together in the edit for that video, and it was just part of it as well, as being able to actually go, okay, we have this idea, how do we execute on it well to budget, blah, 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 all of those businessy things. But I think, so when I'm working on my own stuff, how I kind of approach it is, you need to plan really, really well and make sure you've got all of the time to get the content you need. But I usually go with how it feels. And, you know, if I'm interviewing someone, I'll prep, but I'll just have a conversation, because that's what it's about. It's about getting someone authentically in the moment and not setting up a line for them to say, because you want that, you know?
Yeah, like you just said, you know, working with Heber in the past, it gave them the idea to then work with you on this project because you have worked and become that nice person in a project that you've worked with her before. And I guess that really opens up the freedom to allow yourself to collaborate with those artists with future projects.
Yeah, it's trust, isn't it, really? It's them going, okay, I trust you to execute on this project, so I will use you again, or you were really easy to work with, so I'll use you again. And that's kind of what it's about. Not just video production, with anything, isn't it? You just have to try and be the best you can be and not be awkward. But we're all awkward from time to time, but we just have to do our best.
Hi everyone, my name is Kelly Horn. I'm a freelance movement director and movement and dance teacher, and I have created my own brand, Kelly Horn Movement. Kelly Horn Movement provides movement classes and workshops, and I currently have weekly online movement classes every Tuesday and Thursday at 7 p.m. These classes explore something new and different each week and focus on different ranges of movement, from mindful movement to body conditioning, even to contemporary dance. I wanted to create these classes to pass on and share my joy and passion of movement and offer something that not only boosts creativity, imagination, exploring different ways of moving and allowing people to connect to their bodies, but also promotes physical and mental well-being for performers, creatives and even people outside of the arts. If you would like to join my weekly classes or even just receive updates about future classes and workshops, head to my website kellyhornmovement.com. You can also follow me on Instagram. My handle is @kellyhornmovement and I'm also on Twitter @kellyhornmove. Thank you so much to The Stagey Place for all of the support and enjoy the rest of the episode, everyone. Bye.
I heard this great thing once is that we as humans are attracted to the negative instinctively, like down to our core, like from being cavemen, always seeking out the dangers and the negative in trying to protect our families and whatever. So it's kind of genetically in us to go, no, no, no. Oh my God, no, I can't do that. Oh my God, you know, that's scary. But if you actually go, okay, yes, but let's have a look at that and whatever. You start with a yes. I feel like that's how I've been kind of quite successful in a couple of the things that I've done. And obviously I say successful. I mean, there's a lot more that I want to do. I'm not like blowing smoke up my own bum, but I just would rather approach the situation with a yes and figure it out. Compromise.
Compromise, exactly. So when we're actually looking at maybe working behind the scenes, this might be something that listeners are, you know, maybe thinking about, you know, coming into this industry, and they've kind of realized that actually there's a lot of work that can be done technical wise within the industry. So if there is anybody out there listening to this episode wanting to become a video or an audio producer or just anything technical, what advice would you give them getting into this industry at such a crucial stage?
I would say there's a couple of different bits of advice that I always give, and that's be prepared to work hard no matter where you are. If you don't want to go to uni, there is still a way to do it. You just have to be prepared to work hard. Even though I went to drama school, it wasn't uni. I don't have a degree. And I've been questioned about that. I mean, I ran at ITV for a couple of months, and every single producer that I came into contact with was like, well, why don't you have a degree? And I was like, well, why is that the question? And then once they got to know me, they were like, oh my God, you can actually do this and you're really good, you know? Why don't you have a degree? I'm like, that doesn't matter, surely.
No, exactly. If you've got the skills and you've actually built up that experience, then nothing else really matters because you have that passion to work.
And the ability to, you know, communicate.
Yes, 100% agree.
Approach the situation with a smile, you know, that's yes. So important. So I would say hard work, whether you're graduating uni or not. I would say be self-aware, know yourself, know what you want, know kind of where you want to go for now, and know that it's changeable. I went on a 3-year journey of wanting to be a performer, and I went, no, actually, I'm going to redirect. It's fine. Yeah, be good, be positive, be a person that you would be proud of. Otherwise, what's the point? We're all going to die someday.
Yes, and also you want to be able to remember those projects for those times where you were able to give your all to them and be able to be free in such an open space and open environment.
100%. Absolutely, yeah. I often think back on filming days rather than the finished product. I think back on the day and how much of a laugh it was rather than going, oh my God, look at that video and what we did. And especially with like intermissions that we did in the summer, which was obviously mid-corona, like we all look back on that moment and we go, what we achieved in that time being completely live and all of that is just something that we'll all remember forever, and we'll all be able to say, you know, 2020, that year that you hear about in the history books that's really rubbish and you know, all these things happened, this is what I did.
Yes, exactly. And not only do you do that mid-corona, but you do that for so many people who can actually watch Alice Fern in her back garden, somebody Absolutely. Who has been on Come From Away, and you've got audiences who may not have even seen Alice in Come From from away, to be able to sit and watch through their laptops, sadly not in person. But the accessibility is so important.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you look at that, you must feel so proud about being involved in those projects during lockdown.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great. And I think that this whole weird situation that we've all been put in is going to move video forward in theatre and kind of really highlight its importance. Because not everyone can afford to get to London or New York or go to their touring theatre as much as they need to, because it's such a fantastic experience. We all love being in a theatre live, but there's also different ways that you can enjoy it and different ways that we can all consume it.
Hi, my name is Emily, and I'm the proud owner of Your Little Theatre. Your Little Theatre is your new place to find pre-loved theatre plays at affordable prices. But we don't just stop there. We also match you with some ace small businesses. Kick back and relax with our Blind Date with a Play, where you receive a mystery theatre play for only £5. Or treat yourself even more and get any of our mystery boxes, which all include at least one theatre play or musical theatre score, plus some trinkets from our ace partners of small businesses, who include Hello You Handmade Co., Little Box Studios, Lucky Pup, Baking Bice Boobs, Luna and the Elephant, Geek Sheet Gifts, A Hella Load of Quirky, Tom Kofed, Totalist Graphics, The Harmony Hub, and Stagey Prints, plus so many more. Thank you so much, Stagey Place, for giving us this opportunity. And remember to use code Stagey Place for 10% off on our website, www.yourlittletheatre.com. Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Yeah, do you know what? Again, you know, over lockdown, we've had so many online concerts, and it's been so amazing to see the accessibility worldwide for people who will not be able to see these people in person, probably in their lifetime, you know, due to many factors. But I really hope that's the one thing that does stay, because it's just shown the worldwide appeal that there is for the hunger of online content for theatre.
But also, as a business, if you think, if we go back to full capacity, say, at the Dell or the other Palace or any of the places, how many more tickets can they actually sell if they open it up to video?
Yes, you know, so many more.
I know that's a really business way to look at it, but it's true. It's like, as an industry, it's a way that we can survive and prosper even if people aren't willing to come back to dirty London quite yet.
Yeah, and actually, even though we are coming out of the pandemic, you know, we're not forgetting about the live streaming, because, you know, I'm doing two shows currently. I'm doing Sophia, which is at the Arcola Theatre, and then I'm doing Healy, which is at the Space Arts Centre, and they're both having streamed performances because it just allows, I know that we said it a lot this episode, but the accessibility for people to see it and to tell these stories. And, you know, a lot of people will be a little bit anxious coming back to the theatre. A lot of people won't want to come back until they're probably vaccinated. Well, this is the alternative solution to be able to stream stuff. You know, we had a bonus episode last week with the team from Musical the Musical, who are doing the concert in May the 8th. And there's a worldwide stream of that, because they're going to have people all the way around the world who won't be able to go to Massachusetts to see their show. So they're alternatively doing a live stream performance. And I just think, you know, it just opens so many endless possibilities for our industries to continue this after the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, like, peering behind the curtain, growing up, I lived for the Broadway.com videos of, you know, this person backstage doing this. I think we as a theatre community in the West End need to be a little bit more open to that, because there's a lot of times that I've hit a wall with it. And I think that this may just be the push that we need to be a bit more of a forward-thinking industry.
And I think it's really showing the government just how viable we actually are.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. We're all viable.
Yeah, I was watching the Turbine Theatre's pantomime alternate of Cinderella the other day, which was video and audio produced by Sam Diaz, who is next week's guest. And they did, for their end song, an alternate parody of Six, the title song from Six. And it was so amazing just to talk about how viable we are as an industry.
And perseverance as well, and people actually being open to, you know, I completely understand how horrible it is to perform to nobody. It's weird, you know, trying to interact when you're not actually in the room with someone. It's going to be interesting. moving forward.
Yeah. Well, Jake, thanks so much for coming onto the Stagey Place today. I've got one final question for you, though.
Yes.
And it is obviously the title of this podcast. Listeners who have listened before will know exactly what's coming up. I'm about to ask you where Jake Wehby, your Stagey Place is. So this could be, you know, back in Spain. This could be your childhood. This could be where you first found out about theatre, singing those pop songs in those bars and clubs. Or it could be somewhere in London where you've worked, Jake. So tell me, where is your Stagey Place?
It's really weird because you did send me the questions, but I didn't prep an answer for them.
Great.
So this is really authentic, and yeah, this is a really authentic answer. There's a particular theatre in Spain that I always used to go to, and I used to do an awful lot as well as performing. I used to do video and help with the lights and sound and things like that. Unfortunately, the theatre's now closed, but I'd say that was where it started for me. But is it a bit too wanky to say, you know, in a theatre?
Just in general.
You know, like, it's just, it's such an obvious answer.
Yeah.
But anytime I'm in a, like, a big theatre in the wings or you know, on stage filming or something, I just feel so right and so like it's where I'm meant to be and that I've done the right things and made the right decisions to get to where I need to be. So a little bit of a cop-out. Really apologise.
No, it's fine.
I would just say, in a theatre.
And do you remember the theatre's name in Spain that you went to?
Yes, I do. It was called the Torre Quebrada Casino. It was built in the 70s. Massive theatre, like big revolves and like flies.
God.
And I once sang Bohemian Rhapsody on a fly there. And I was like, yeah, this is peak of my life, obviously. So yeah, so it's Torre Quebrada Casino. Unfortunately, it's closed now because it is so old. But yeah, so that would be the first place. But I would say kind of currently, anytime I get to be in a real theatre and do my thing, I'm loving it.
Well, Jake, once again, thanks so much for coming onto the Stagey Place today. It's been really lovely, like, to hear, as well, like, I've done a little bit of video stuff in the past uni. I'm not going to do it as a career, but it's nice to hear how you've managed to get into the industry using your connections and your networks, and, you know, to be able to work on, like, the intermissions and the Out of the Darkness Into the Spotlight concerts. It just goes to show how versatile so many theatre makers are in this industry, and for you to have worked throughout the pandemic, it's just been so great to hear your stance on things in this episode today. So, you know, it's just been really such a really detailed and, you know, insightful chat today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also I would love people to take away from this, if I may, that it's not one straight arrow. If you're just getting into this world, you find so many different things along the way, and you just need to embrace finding those.
Oh, what a perfect message to end the episode on today. Jake, thank you so much for joining me again.
Oh, of course, it's been such a pleasure. Be too soon. Bye.
And there we go, that was episode 5 of series 3 of The Stagey Place, our penultimate episode this series, with today's guest, Jake Wehby. And if you've enjoyed listening to Jake and want to find more about his projects, you can follow him on Instagram at Jake Wehby, as well as following his website, jw.productions. Don't forget that if you aren't already, you can also follow The Stagey Place on our social medias at The Stagey Place on Instagram and Twitter. And until next time, where we'll be joined by Sam Diaz, who is a video and audio producer, I hope you have a lovely week, and I look forward to hear from you soon.